Hi, my name is Mersin Kapadia. I am the Security Program Manager here on the Internet of Things Client Platform team. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about security and what Windows IoT 10 Core brings to the table in terms of security. I drive our security strategy and efforts for Windows IoT Client Platform, and today I'm joined by Stefan Thom. Stefan, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Stefan Thom. I'm the architect for the Windows 10 Core IoT Client Platform. And we have worked over the past few months to bring a lot of interesting security features to the platform.
Thanks. Stefan, you've been in the security space for a very long time, so let's talk a little bit about the exciting world of security. We're seeing a lot of attacks and a lot of vulnerabilities that attackers are taking advantage of. There's obviously, you know, large-scale attacks that can have real-world implications. A city's power grid, for example, being attacked and people losing power, or something like Mirai's botnet attack, where connected devices were basically targeted and were used as little drones, or botnets, I apologize. So, you know, there's also devices on the lower end. We're seeing things like vehicle ECUs, for example, being attacked and critical vehicle functions being taken over. We're seeing even home devices like smart thermostats getting rooted, or we're seeing baby monitors getting hacked. So how do you think we should go about this? Because maybe I should just keep my toaster disconnected.
Yeah, the attack surface from these devices is quite large, and Microsoft has a lot of experience with in the enterprise space with security features in Windows. And we have worked to bring these features into IoT devices. These functionalities not only protect the device while it is connected to the network, but it also provides some security against physical tampering with the device and makes sure that these devices are at least to some level resilient against physically present people. When we look at an IoT device, it has a different security property than, let's say, a notebook that is more or less always under the control of some user. An IoT device gets deployed at some point and then has to run more or less autonomously. That gives an attacker a lot of time to tamper with the device, to find more data in it. So we need essentially the entire amount of enterprise security features and then some in these devices to make sure that the integrity and the functionality of these devices is not tampered with.
Cool. And really what we should be looking at is people should be thinking about security right from the prototyping phase, design phase, through to commercialization, right? We shouldn't be thinking about security as kind of a bolt-on solution because really then when you're cutting corners and you're trying to ship the product, then people are thinking about how much more money it's going to take to go back and redesign things and make sure we're shipping, you know, devices that are secure and safe and keeping consumer data, for example, confidential and private and whatnot. So really, device manufacturers should be thinking about things like, you know, making sure they have firmware that's locked down on their devices, making sure that they're, you know, not shipping with our prototype images, for example, and building their own images, creating their own images that don't have developer tools. Overall, making sure that as they're thinking about both the design aspect of it and then all the way through to commercialization, they're doing things like, you know, closing down firewall ports. They're making sure they're not keeping default passwords around and, you know, using maybe certificate-based authentication or other more secure methods of authentication for devices where appropriate and necessary.
But it goes past that, right? So we're also have to consider security mechanisms that are outside of the control of the operating system. To get to a very small trusted computing base that preferably is created in hardware. On the PC side, we have enjoyed all the business laptops and desktops having trusted platform modules from the TCG. And these devices provide key isolation, so even if the operating system gets subverted, it doesn't lose all its secrets right away. Because it is about the fact that at some point you want to roll out a patch and you want to secure the device again, preferably remotely. Because it in certain scenarios, it may be more expensive to send a technician out to replace a device than the device itself.
Yep. Very true. So let's talk a little bit about the security capabilities that that the engineering team has been working on for Windows 10 IoT Core. We started with kind of making sure that we have the foundational blocks in the platform so that people can leverage that and build features on top of that. And we've obviously used some of those foundation pieces to build additional capabilities on top of Windows features as well. So, you know, things like outside of, for example, UEFI Secure Boot, we've got capabilities you talked about, like TPM support on IoT devices. We've got even BitLocker device encryption available. And now we've, with our latest release, we also supported full device lockdown with Config CI. So we'll go through a little bit of what those are in some detail. So let's actually talk a little bit about TPMs. And you've been working with the Trusted Computing Group for a very long time, actually. I think you're wearing the TCG shirt. So give us a little bit of history there. And people often ask me, TPMs are used in these bigger machines, these laptops that are enterprise-class devices. They're thousands of dollars. What role does a TPM have on a $30 IoT device, for example, right?
TPMs come in different flavors to these devices. We have firmware devices that run the TPM functionality in a virtualized context, like, for example, ARM TrustZone. TPMs can come integrated into the chipset or the processor itself. TPMs come as discrete devices that get soldered down on the board. The TPM itself is a passive part. It doesn't do anything by itself, so it needs the support of the firmware, UEFI for that matter, to start making measurements into the TPM. Also, the TPM is, as I said, a passive part, so it will never stop execution of anything, but it can withhold secrets. So in the BitLocker case, for example, the measurement of the starting operating system image and the measurement of the policies that UEFI is guided by for booting the platform gets measured into the TPM. And at a certain point in time, the TPM is going to decide if the BitLocker key gets released to the operating system or not. So these are functionalities that need to be outside of the operating system, so malicious code cannot hijack this and essentially allow an attacker to take the key off the platform and just decrypt the volume and then turn BitLocker off.
What kind of other applications would you say developers should be thinking about when building their apps and devices? How would a TPM be beneficial to some of those folks? I mean, you talked a little bit about BitLocker or device encryption. You kind of briefly talked about key storage. But what are some real-world scenarios that you think developers should be thinking about using the TPM for?
Yeah, so we all know that when we communicate with the device, and these are in large scales headless devices that are deployed somewhere on the lowest level of your parking garage. For that matter, there's no keyboard, there's no mouse, there's no screen. The only way to communicate with these devices is usually via a network stack, and the most prevalent protocol that we see to secure communication on the network is something like TLS or SSL. These protocols rely on certificates that are issued to the device. So the TPM is a perfect way of provisioning a certificate into the TPM, so Windows can use the TPM, but you cannot copy the key off of the device and then duplicate the device in a different space, right, or virtualize it for that matter, or act as that device. So using the TPM for key storage is exactly the right thing. Having the TLS certificate in there, let's say you have a web server on there, you want to make sure that your server certificate actually is held by the TPM. The server can use that key to do the authentication towards the client. Mm-hmm. We have another scenario when the device is connected to Azure IoT Hub. We permit storing the symmetric HMAC key that Azure issues to the device in the TPM. That allows a device to have a permanent credential issued to the hardware that will even survive if you completely wipe the operating system and reprovision that. So the credential is really bound and stored in hardware. It's not even stored in the file system. And that creates a lot of interesting resiliency scenarios where you can update the device without having to reestablish the identity.
Right. Awesome, thanks. Let's take a quick second, switch over to our Windows on Devices page. I just want to talk about some of the information we have published there. So if you actually go to windowsondevices.com, this is where we talk a lot about what Windows 10 IoT Core is, the different platforms that we have support for today. If you go into the docs section specifically, you'll see down on the left side there is a security tab that talks a little bit about, you know, things you want to think about when you're building secure IoT devices. We'll talk a little bit about BitLocker and DeviceGuard in more detail here. You can also get some information about TPMs. We've published, you know, libraries and sample codes. Let's take a look at one of these. I wanted to show this to a few folks. So Urchin Library, actually, you authored that as well, Stefan. I think that's been useful for a lot of people. There's a sample here for the TPM 2.0 test tool. Let's take a look at that. If you actually go build this and then run it against any of your devices where you have either a firmware TPM or a discrete TPM or even software TPM enabled while you're doing development, this is definitely very useful. I know we didn't talk a lot about software TPMs, but we've also published that actually, and maybe you can go into a little bit of that and why developers would find that very valuable.
Yeah, I think the software TPM is an excellent way for people to start working with a higher grade of security on their devices and taking a dependency on TPMs in their applications without actually having a device that has a TPM. We know that the Dragon board that we have here on the table comes with a firmware TPM, but the Raspberry Pi, for example, does not have a TPM. And if you can plug one in if you have one from a TPM manufacturer, but if you don't have one and you just want to try this functionality out, you can very easily turn on what we call software TPM or TPM simulator. And that behaves, for all intents and purposes, like a TPM. It doesn't offer any security, but it has all the functionality you would want. So you can verify, for example, certificate storage in that scenario. You can build an application and a deployment scenario that brings the certificate down onto the device. And when you're ready to ship this, you essentially just switch the platform to one that has a real TPM. Your code doesn't have to change because the interfaces are all the same. So you can fully verify this and make sure that the functionality in the code and the provisioning scenarios cover the TPM. And then when you're ready, you go to a platform that has a real hardware TPM with real security, and you don't have to change a line of code. That is really, really interesting, and it offers a very easy way for people to come in and build software that has a dependency on physical security.
And I think you mentioned a good point here that's important to note again, that software TPM is really just for development purposes. And
I can't say that enough. It no security. Mm-mm,
shouldn't
nothing.
Accidentally ship it with software TPM because people might go, software TPM will save me cost, both in terms of a SOC that supports FTPM or having a discrete TPM. So
I will personally come after you if you ship a software TPM.
That's true. I would believe him. All right. Let's do a quick demo here. So I'm going to use PuTTY to log into a Dragon board here that I have on the table. Let's take a look. Actually, you know what? Let's run the T2T sample. I think I can do that. There we go. So I talked a little bit about the T2T sample that we have published on the Windows on Devices page. You can pull that down from GitHub. And if you build it and run it, you'll be able to leverage a couple of the test parameters and test config parameters that we have here. So if you run T2T, let's take a look. Let's run the ALG command. So these are all the algorithms and curves that would be supported by this particular TPM, for example. I think you also have T2T minus cap, which actually just shows you the different capabilities that this particular TPM is capable of. So definitely some interesting stuff to go look at over there. I definitely encourage you to start there to think about how the TPM will really be beneficial to you as you're thinking about developing your application or your new device type that you're thinking about for IoT, right? Everyone wants to be the first and first to market with their coolest IoT idea.
So. Yes. Also, the code shows people who are new to programming against the TPM a little bit how the APIs are used. The Urchin framework that you talked earlier before is a TSS stack, a TPM software stack,
right,
that permits you to issue commands and parse response that you exchange with the TPM. If you don't have a software layer like that, then writing code for a TPM natively is very painful. There's another TPM stack that was done by Microsoft Research. It's called TSS.C#, mm-hmm, and then there's a TSS.C++ stack. Yeah. Both of those are also on
yeah,
Git.
Yep.
And these are platform independent. We're saying like Urchin, we have been running Urchin on microcontrollers. We have been running the C++ code on Linux platforms. So since the TPM is an industry standard that is not necessarily Windows specific, the code that you write against the TPM now can run basically on any device.
Great. Awesome, thank you. So let's switch over to talking a little bit about one of the implementations that we've got that uses the TPM. We talked a little bit about BitLocker today. So why should device builders be thinking about device encryption? I mean, there's obviously the idea that if you've got user private or confidential data, especially with devices that are going to be all around us, potentially easily accessible to attackers, if you're thinking about storing some user information on the device itself, then you want to make sure that device can't be tampered with, taken offline, and then the storage media can be attacked, and content can be taken out of it. But are there other scenarios kind of that benefit from encryption overall that you believe people should be thinking about?
Well, so one thing is in basic integrity protection of the device itself. So access to the registry, which you know, after all, it's Windows, right? The registry defines what this Windows device will do and will not do.
Right.
And so in order to make sure that the configuration of this device is not easily changeable, making sure that the registry cannot be tampered with is one of the key parts. Also, the devices may not necessarily store their own data, but they may cache it. So there may be residual data somewhere on the device that the developer may not even think about in temp files, in other cache places. So in order to make sure that there's no accidental data loss, confidential data loss, we're going to having BitLocker turn on these devices essentially covers all secrets that run through Windows. The way we are suggesting Windows to be deployed is something that is unlocked with the TPM. But for developer cases, it may be necessary to gain access to the device itself. You might be, you know, able to show this a little bit, how to retrieve data from a device that may have gone fallen out of service, and you know, we need to recover data from that device.
Right. Cool. So here what I have is a Dragon board for which we've enabled BitLocker, so you can see it up there now. So this is our prototype or image that we've published, and this is just running the basic Windows 10 IoT core image, but we've enabled encryption on this device. And so what I want to quickly show is, let me switch over to my PC. So if we get this right. Okay, so I'm going to put it into USB mass storage mode, and let's see what happens. There we go. So you can see that the storage media, the embedded storage medium on this device was mounted onto my PC, but it shows that it's actually BitLocker protected, and so if I actually try to access it, I can't. But you can see that when the device is just simply powered on, the TPM has the keys that can unlock the device, and so you can actually boot into it. One thing that would be good to add here is how would a developer actually get access to this device if they wanted to do that while they're in development?
So the way BitLocker is deployed on these devices is with a TPM-based key. So when the platform boots, it'll get access if the device wasn't tampered with. And the other protector that we're deploying to this is a certificate-based DRA, data recovery agent. And this data recovery agent is associated with a public-private key pair on the developer's notebook. So the developer doesn't have to remember a different secret for every device that he ships. Since the same certificate is baked into every device, he can now, with his private key, unlock every device from him and therefore get access to them. Also, since the private key of that certificate can be stored in the TPM, the developer can make sure that no malware on his PC, on his development PC, could potentially get access to these keys and therefore break into devices in a big scale. The certificate can be also on a smart card. So for retail devices, you want to make sure that you can recover the data from these devices. But you want to make sure that the developer itself does not necessarily can do harm to the company by mass unlocking devices after he was fired.
Okay. Awesome, thanks for that. So let's talk a little bit about device lockdown. That's one of the last features that we released with RS2 for Windows 10 IoT Core. And I think customers often have questions about what is exactly code integrity, what is user mode code integrity, or UMCI, what is kernel mode code integrity, and how can I really take my IoT devices and lock them down? So maybe you can give us a brief overview of kind of where device lockdown came from and how it makes sense for IoT devices.
Yeah, Windows has kernel mode code integrity since the first time we shipped the AMD 64 operating system. Back then, all drivers needed to be signed with a strong code signing certificate. We have applied that to the Core IoT platform as well. And additionally to that, a little bit later, Microsoft adopted something that we call user mode code integrity that requires every user mode binary to be signed to. For example, on the Windows Phone, we have used this to make sure that if malicious code got onto the platform, like if I was able to somehow write it to the disk, just the presence of the binary does not expose access to the device, because before the kernel would execute a binary, it would make code integrity measurements and verify the certification. So this means a device manufacturer can obtain his own code signing certificates, sign all his binaries, and also indicate which OEM's driver, for example, certificates he trusts. And he can craft a device lockdown policy that will very hard enumerate all the certificate and all the authorities that can run code on the platform. That means that an attacker who has code will never be able to run it on the device, even if BitLocker would be disabled.
Yep. And so that's great protection in terms of malware getting on the device. So if somehow malware was able to get on the device, there is a possibility that the malware at least won't be able to run because it's not going to be signed by that OEM or device manufacturer.
That's correct.
And so, yes, it doesn't necessarily protect from all types of malware, in-memory malware or things that may get into the device somehow, but at least it's a barrier for a lot of the malware that's out there.
This is one of the more powerful enterprise features to lock a device down. We have seen on the mobile platforms that it was very successful, and we've seen on enterprise machines where administrators lock this down. We're essentially giving the same power now to the device manufacturer to strongly determine which code is supposed to run on the platform. For IoT devices, this has an incredible benefit of limited liability. If I build a device that has access to physical resources and malware somehow makes it on that device, and that device misbehaves and could cause us damage, for example, then the manufacturer could be liable for leaving a door open like this. Code integrity allows them to lock it down, which means third-party code can never run on the platform. So the device will never do anything that is not anticipated by the device manufacturer.
Right, and it's really helpful for IoT devices, actually, because IoT devices are generally supposed to be kind of purpose-built, fixed function, you know, single-purpose almost device, where it, the behavior of this device is very well defined. And so the device builder really knows what drivers are going to be on here, what applications he expects to be running, right? This is not a general-purpose computing device like a PC or a phone or a tablet or something else, where, you know, you're going to the store and downloading games one day or browsing the internet the next. So definitely a lot of benefits there with device lockdown. Let's switch over for a second, and we'll talk a little bit about what we've published here on the Windows on Devices page. So if you go to the Secure Boot, BitLocker, and Device Guard page, we have some information that talks a little bit about kind of what we gave you a brief overview of here. And then we actually have a turnkey security package that you can download. So when you're thinking about commercializing your product, this script actually goes through and does a whole bunch of things for you. It'll provision all your secure boot variables so you can get secure boot set up and available to you. It also sets up the device for encryption. We talked about data recovery. It also allows you to specify within the script, you can specify what DRA certificates you want to use there. So that'll help you unlock the device if you ever want to troubleshoot that. Scanning through your kind of golden device image to identify all of the applications and drivers that you want to ship your final product with, and then create a policy out of that that defines all of the certificates that are considered valid authorities for whatever is laid out on that machine to run.
Yeah, as you can imagine, that creating this policy is a very device and even manufacturer-specific process. So there's no way for Microsoft to provide something like this out of the box. So this needs to be generated against the actual product, and the device manufacturer has to do that. But we have tried to put scripts together and aids that will help him to get the right data in there. And then at the end of the day, he can review this policy data and make sure that all the certificates that he finds in that policy are really the intended ones, and not an unauthorized driver has, you know, for some reason from a development process, been left in the image and therefore will compromise the device security. So it's really, really important that the device manufacturer does a final inspection of the policy before it then gets deployed onto the device.
Absolutely, good point. So let's take a look at the lockdown script itself. You can click on this link that takes you to the GitHub page where we've provided all of the PowerShell modules and scripts that are available to you. Let's take a look at the qcdbsettings.xml file. This specifically is for the Qualcomm Dragon board, for which we have a prototype or FFU available. And our development team here basically worked on this to make this extremely easy. So you'll see here that all of the required secure variables, such as the platform key, key exchange key, DB keys, are all available under the secure boot tag. So you can update these as needed. You can specify your BitLocker DRA certificates. You can also look at your SI policy and make any necessary updates to that. So you can add your own certificates to this for anything that you're self-signing. If you want to allow apps from the Microsoft Store, for example, there's a node here that you can uncomment out. So that allows you to actually take applications that have been published to the Windows Store and run those as well. And then finally, any of the Microsoft certificates that you obviously need in order to run Windows itself, or if you're thinking about running any test images or anything like that. Let's go through a quick run of what this looks like. Let's see if I have everything open. So I have a... So I'm just... I'm just connected to my Dragon board here that I have up and running, and it's a simple Hello World app. So let's go to the location where I have this. Oops. So if I run Hello World, so yeah, as you can see, because I haven't signed helloworld.exe, I actually can't run it. So let's take a look at what signing would look like here. So I'm just opening up a VS command prompt, and I've just got a simple batch file here. You can take a look at what that does. So it's just going to copy hello world to hello world signed, and then I'm going to use the sign tool to actually apply my own PFX certificate here, which is labeled OEM UMCI, and I'm going to sign hello world sign.exe with that certificate. So let's try that. Okay, so I've now got hello world sign.exe. What I'm going to do is transfer that file over to the Dragon board, which is here. And now, when I go back to the Dragon board, we can run signed. And there we go. So now that I signed the DXE, it actually ran. But if I didn't sign it, then it was blocked, because the SI policy allows anything signed with the certificate to run. OK, so that pretty much wraps up what we wanted to talk about here. We talked a little bit about TPMs and why developers should be thinking about really using TPMs in their IoT platforms, even if they don't want to spend the money to have a discrete TPM on the device. At least for a lot of the SOCs that we're supporting, they have firmware TPM capabilities, and those might be sufficient depending on the task that you're doing.
Yes.
We talked about functionality that's built on top of the TPM. So today what we're doing is utilizing the TPM with BitLocker device encryption, so all of your content is secured against offline attacks potentially. And then we talked a little bit about device lockdown and how you can have essentially config CI lock down the device to say, these are my apps, these are my drivers for these set of peripherals and devices that I've got in my IoT device, and this is all I want to run and nothing else.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you. I know the engineering team has worked very hard on this, and thanks, Stefan, for all the information that you shared with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I also want to thank the engineers behind the scenes who couldn't make it, including Alan Chan. He's a great guy. He couldn't join us today, but I know that there's a lot more coming from you guys in the future, so I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Bye.